Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WG in a Friday edition, the Cinco de Mayo. We're going to talk a little bit later today to the mayor of Highwood. As I mentioned with Bill and Wendy, they've got this new recycling program. I guess it's composting, where they would take your food scraps now, not just during the summer, but all year round. They've put out a new bin. So when you put the garbage out in Highwood beginning this week, I think you've got three things to put out: the regular recycling, the regular garbage, and now this 35-gallon bin. So we'll talk about that and why that's significant for a town like Highwood. A little bit later in the program, we will talk with Greg McBride from Bankrate.com. And lo and behold, my first guest, Mark Hamrick from Bankrate.com. But we're going to start things off with Andrea Haines, as we do most Fridays, editor of Blue Sky Innovation. You read that in the Chicago Tribune, and she joins us now. Andrea, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
I'm so excited about some of the things we're going to talk about that you guys have written this week or coming up. But let's start with the whole gray ball thing. We've talked about Uber, and the CEO of Uber, man, from what I read and the piece you guys wrote, kind of come out and say he's kind of a jag.
Wow.
Right?
It does seem like it's a crisis a week right now for Uber, doesn't it? From sexual harassment to things they're doing to competitors to this and that. There's a new drama once a week.
This new thing is Grayball.
The new thing is Grayball, which sort of started to come on the scene a little while ago. The New York Times wrote about it in March. But what's happening now is the Department of Justice is investigating and considering criminal charges over this, which would be, you know, a bigger deal than some of the civil things that have been happening.
And so what they're doing is, these are places where they're not supposed to be operating, right? And they had this software that allows them, I'm not sure I understand it, it would allow them to identify regulators and then avoid them. How did they know which customers were regulators?
Yeah, so they're, you know, of course you register, right? They have some information about you. So they are using this information to figure out who you are and if they think you might potentially be investigating them or, you know, that type of thing. They're running, I almost would describe it as like a ghost app.
Right.
So like, if you're Steve Bertrand, you're potentially investigating Uber, you're going undercover to try to summon one of their vehicles where they're not supposed to be operating. So you open the Uber app. You are, you know, you can see where the cars are, you
right,
call
right,
for
right.
it, you know what it looks like, right? But it's not actually the Uber app. So you think you're using the Uber app, and you think you're summoning a car, in which case you'll find out they're operating here and they're not supposed to be operating here. But what they're doing is they know who you are, and so they're giving you a sort of parallel version of the universe in which you don't wind up getting a car, and so they're able to mask what they're doing.
All right, so they're in trouble now. The Justice Department's looking at them, and we'll see where that ends up. I love this story, or this company called Changed, C-H-A-N-G-E, capital E-D.
Yep.
And the idea is, are they a Chicago company?
Yes.
And so it's not unusual that there's these savings apps where they'll take, you know, a roundup. So you buy something for 69 cents, 31 cents goes to savings or whatever. In this case, it's going to go directly to pay off your student loan, right?
Exactly.
I love this. And you don't love it that much?
It's not that I don't love it. Maybe it depends on what your personal pain point is. I guess for me, I feel like, you know, figure out what spare change you can spare in a month. You calculate whatever that amount is. You can automatically do that through your own bank account. You don't necessarily need a middleman. But I get that you kind of maybe need a little impetus to do it. And so perhaps this can provide that.
Well, they say, you know, one of the best ways to save is to do it automatically. And so you're not always aware of it.
Exactly. And psychologically, there's some trick there, right? That you're just like, keep the change. It's sort of almost a psychological trick about the spending that maybe makes it easier for you to put a little more money in that direction.
Okay. Numbers. The company says a borrower who pays $50 extra each month, so that much in change each month, can save up to $10,000 in interest on a $37,000 loan over 25 years. It's a lot of numbers, but 10 grand sounds pretty nice.
Yes. And, you know, that's where I would add that, you know, even if you're not using their app, you can get 50 extra dollars a month on your loan and get the same result. So it's just to be clear, this is sort of a behavioral thing almost. There's no magic with the math here. It's prepaying your loan.
Well, here's the thing that we got to keep going because I want to talk about the next site too.
For sure.
But as a parent of a couple college kids, I would love to do this for my kids. So I wouldn't have to think that much about it. And this would be a way for me to contribute without writing a check.
And
now
they're working
toward
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're in 1871 and they're, you know, they're new, but they're working on things like that. So that I could see where you could get a parent or somebody who would also do it And then, you know, maybe it really starts chipping away at
it's
things.
Like Girl Scout cookie sales. Just sell the app to everyone you know.
Yeah, right.
Right? And you're paid off quickly. Okay. And then you get old and you die and you sell your stuff.
Yeah. So different phase of life here is Everything But the House, which is based in Cincinnati, but they've just started kind of ramping up what they're offering in Chicago. As you pointed out when we were chatting, they've gotten almost $85 million in funding, which is a lot. But what they do is come into, let's say, your home, your storage unit, whatever it may be, when you are basically having the equivalent of an estate sale, right? Perhaps someone has died. Perhaps they've sold a home. Perhaps you're just buried in stuff and you want someone to come and literally help you go, this you get rid of, this you donate, these things we can sell. And then they handle the actual shipping and the listing of the item
on
their site.
They put it up on their site for auction.
Exactly. Yeah. So they kind of do all that.
It said that everything starts at a dollar. What is that? Are you obligated to sell everything if no one bids more than a dollar?
You know, I don't think so. Okay. They do wind up taking 40% of what things sell for.
Which sounds like a lot until you consider they do all the shipping too.
Exactly. They handle the shipping and kind of all the logistics. And like, you know, as you said, if you don't want people coming to your house, you don't want to have to manage all these kind of details that can be around using other types of sites. This makes it a little easier for you.
Everything But the House, it's called.
Exactly.
And out of Cincinnati, but they've come. They've got a real presence. They're up and running here.
Yes, they're here and up and running, and they're adding people here.
Andrea Haynes, I'm sorry. It seems like we're kind of quick today.
We're talking fast today.
Nice
okay.
to
we got
see
a lot
you.
To get in.
Have a great weekend. 1223, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Every time I'm stressed, I just talk to Tom Gimbel, the CEO and founder of the LaSalle Network. Welcome back here, big boy.
Always good to be with you, my friend.
All right, so we've been talking a lot this time of year about college graduates,
yeah.
right, and the jobs reports coming out. I'm going to talk to some folks later about that and about the prospects.
Great report
people
today.
Coming out. Yeah, nice surprise. That's always a nice surprise.
I was really surprised.
So it's good. Everything's
great
good.
News.
But the idea is that there are going to be young people graduating from college and going out into the work world. I had a conversation with a guy in my health club. I think it was just this morning about, we were talking yesterday about how millennials need perks at work, and
right.
you're very big
right.
at that, you know.
Right.
And this guy's like, I don't
Cinco
get
de Mayo
that.
Lunch
yeah.
today.
Is that right? So say you're hiring someone right out of college. We talk about the adjustment for that someone,
yeah.
but there's an adjustment for the employer as well.
Yeah, but it's not like hiring somebody who's coming in with 10, 15, 20 years, even 5 years of experience. And it's even if students had an internship, it's their first time getting paid real dollars, real benefits, right? What the expectations
right, right.
come with that. And where a lot of employers, you know, mess up is they don't onboard people the right way.
What do you mean by
people think onboarding is getting your access code to your computer, to the system, here's the bathroom key, here's the hours of operation, here's your insurance forms. But onboarding is about managing expectations, right? Now you're here, you're one of us, this is what our expectations
okay,
are.
Okay, so I'm going back to the health club and the old guys on the bench, and they're saying, come on, you should know how to work and do your job. You shouldn't be... You sound like maybe you're coddling these people when they come
no,
in.
And your wife would say, you should know what to do on the weekends. I shouldn't have to nag you either,
and yet,
but we
right,
all get in trouble.
Right.
I think it's one of those issues that you need to manage. I think you do it even with experienced hires. You have to be able to tell them what you expect from them, or they don't know.
Well, so, I mean, that's kind of a theme for our conversations, isn't it? It is the communication of it and setting expectations.
Well, think about it. Really, the people say, oh, you should know, which is really code word for management saying, I don't like confrontation.
You should have known that.
Right?
Right.
Well, why don't you want to tell somebody that? Because you don't want to have a conflict. You don't want to have confrontation. So you can either have the confrontation in the beginning when they've done nothing wrong, or you can have the confrontation 6 months later when you're ready to fire
them.
What
do you think it is that they are least, I don't want to say prepared for, because that implies they should have been, but takes new employees most off guard, or, you know, is their biggest learning curve right off the bat?
It's really more along the lines of what the deadlines are for getting things done.
Really?
Yeah. It is. But most managers say, hey, Steve, I need you to get this done. Can you have time to do this? Yes. Okay, great. See you later. Bye. Well, no one knows when.
Ah, okay.
Right?
Right.
Priority number one to you, priority number seven to the person who took
it. So that surprises me, because I would think the one thing that graduating students would be prepared for would be doing homework assignments and things like getting them on time.
But they have deadlines. They know when
deadlines
are.
And the deadlines are set.
You
That's
come
what
to
you're
work
saying.
And we work in a gray area.
I see.
Right?
Okay.
When do you want your producer to get you the information to the show? Do you want it yesterday, last night, this morning, an hour before?
I just like right. it before the show starts, Bennett. Just once.
But
no,
those
that's
are,
so not true.
Those are the challenges that you face. And I'll give you an example. Whenever we deal with a manager, and somebody who works for them or on their team quits or gets fired, and they want somebody else. They want to pay them what the person was getting paid when they started with them and expect the level of service from when they left
ended,
them.
Right. Good point.
Right?
Right.
And it just doesn't work that way. So you got to go back in time and either pay less and have the pain or pay more and have a little bit less pain, but you still need to manage the expectations of how. What I tell every manager, every employer, is you should have a letter that you've written. This is the best way to work with me. Email, text, nights, weekends, whatever you like, and give that to somebody who works for you.
Do many people do that?
Very few.
Right. But it's a great idea. I mean,
you're saying what your pet peeves are, what the issues are. Where did what a candidate should say is, what did the last person in this job who failed, why did they fail?
Right, right.
Like people always want to go, oh, what does the best person do? Right. If you're really good, you'll get there.
When's the yoga class?
Yeah, right. Exactly right.
Tom Gimbel, the CEO, founder of the LaSalle Network. People can find more from you at
the LaSalle, or at, my apologies, at LaSalle Network, LaSalleNetwork.com, and my Cubs tweets at Tom Gimbel.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, Kim's newscast, sponsored by Zeke Smart Pillow today. So we thank them for that. All right, so it is May 5th, the Cinco de Mayo, and summer just around the corner. It doesn't feel like it quite yet, but I have to say one of my favorite things about summer is Highwood, Illinois. And the mayor, Charlie Picaro, is on the phone line now, mayor of Highwood. Mayor, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Steve, thank you very much for having me.
You guys know how to have fun up there, don't you?
We certainly do. We have lots of festivals every year. Trying to make Highwood that little suburb of destination.
I want to talk about this new project that you are, I don't know if you'd say you announced it this week or next week, but we'll get into that. But first, you know, Highwood is, it seems to me, is one of those unique towns around this area that, unique means it's not like any other. But tell me a little bit about your town and how it is you make your mark.
So Highwood, as I mentioned, it's been a town of destination ever since I can remember. When I was a little kid, my parents would say they're going to Highwood for dinner.
Yeah,
they never said where, when. They just going to Highwood.
As you know, that's so true. You never say I'm going to Northbrook for dinner. You say the restaurant, or you never go to LaGrange for dinner. But when it's Highwood, you say we're going to Highwood.
Right, and we've been blessed with about 35 restaurants, 20 or so bars, and really just a nightlife that just pushes and makes the city thrive.
Yeah, and it's a real mix, too, right? It's a cultural mix, which I always find interesting.
We have a wonderful, diverse population up here. I think we're about 50% Hispanic-speaking, and it's a wonderful opportunity for someone to open their eyes and become a little more diverse, if you will.
Yeah, and you're right, and it's just like, because all you're going to do is you're going to go and you're just going to be. You're going to be with people who might not be like you or people who are like you, and everyone who's being there is just having a good time. I love going to, I don't know what you call it now. We used to call it the farmer's market, but the thing you have, I think it's on Wednesday evenings up there.
Unfortunately, we took away the word farmers because no farmers would come.
It's
more of a gourmet market now with local restaurants and food trucks and just a good time for families and a lot of activities for little kids.
Yeah, okay. So we got all of that. Reason to go, destination town, a lot of fun, diverse, everything like that. And now here it is. You're announcing this new, I'll call it a refuse program or food scrap program. Tell me exactly what you're doing here.
So what we've done is we've teamed up with Lakeshore Recycling, and they came to us with the idea of organic waste. Now, when I was a little kid, see, no one really knew what recycling was.
No.
I mean, it was maybe a newspaper, maybe a can. I mean, nowadays my kids are telling me what I can and cannot recycle. So the whole recycling has come a long way, and we believe that organic is truly going to be the next step of recycling. You know, they say what came from the earth, we're going to put back into the earth.
Okay, so you've given everyone in Highwood now a third bin, right? A smaller bin.
Right.
So you've got the regular recycling, the glass, the tins, and things like that. You've got your regular garbage, and now in this third bin will go what? Table scraps? What else?
That's exactly right. Table scraps from coffee grounds, tea bags, lawn clippings. And I think the biggest thing that the biggest argument in my house is the pizza box.
Yes, exactly.
That's the most exciting thing in the house. We know exactly where they go now.
Because you never knew, right? You're not supposed to put them in recycling, but they'll put them in this refuse, this land refuse, because it will biodegrade in the compost pile. And that's the idea, right? All of this is going to go into a compost pile.
That's exactly right. Just up the road in Lake Bluff, they have a nice compost center that will be there next Tuesday or Wednesday, I think it's the 10th, kicking off this program.
Yeah, and it's next Wednesday, Mayor. Put it in your schedule, okay? I don't want you to miss
thank
it.
Thank you. I better put it right now.
But the other thing about it is then you collect lawn clippings and flowers and all of that during the summer last year, but this is stuff that you're going to be doing year-round.
It is year-round. So really what it's a great opportunity for us to educate. It's all about building habits, you know what I'm saying? And
right.
Giving some thought to it. So in about 2 years, there's no more thought that's needed. You know where these scraps go. You know where the plastics go. You know where the cardboards go. It's just another thing to think about that you won't have to think about in a couple of years.
Okay,
you have to start now.
When I think of, though, two things I'm going to say. I'm sure you must have had some people mm-hmm. saying, I don't want to wheel out a third cart every week. Am I right? You had to sell people on that?
Are you talking to my kids again?
Maybe, yeah.
That's exactly. You do get a little bit of that, but, you know, it's one cart. It goes, you know, right. 50 feet down to the end of the driveway, and they pick it up. Again, it's just getting habits formed. And,
yep.
and these are good habits that should help help our planet.
Well, the other thing then is if these are food scraps, I mean, I'm thinking of raccoons, other animals, coyotes or whatever, that might be a little more interested in this than they would be in the regular recycling bin or the garbage bin or things like that. I mean, I suspect that they're easily secured, or is there an issue there?
They are very, you know, that's a good issue. Not a good issue, but that could happen, but they are secure. They're quite heavy lids, which is nice, and people keep them, you know, close to the home at night or in the garage, and they're picked up the next morning, but they are very secure, I will say that. Very impressed with the quality of the containers, if you will.
Now, how does this apply? You mentioned the 35, I think you said 35 restaurants in Highwood.
Yep.
Are they partaking in this as well? I would imagine they've got commercial pickup, but is there a food mix in there?
You know what? They have. It's not out for them to do just yet. We are going to have them do it voluntarily. And at the end of the day, it's a good economic move for them because the table scraps are mostly liquid, and that weighs the most.
Mm-hmm.
And haulers charge by the pound.
Oh.
So if you're able to separate these out a little bit and, you know, again, build good habits and get used to it, it will reduce their hauling costs for waste going forward.
All right. So the bins were delivered this week, right?
Yep. We had our first pickup on Wednesday.
Oh, you had the first pickup on Wednesday. So everything went okay?
No problems.
Not one. Come on, Mayor. Not one single solitary problem.
Not that we're going to be talking about this afternoon.
All right. Now that's a little more honest of an answer. You guys have a goal of 60% waste recycling, 60% organic, or what is that goal?
Our goal is to get to, I think it's by the year 2020, to get to 60% of all of the garbage be recycling.
And how close are you?
Oh. I don't know. We'll have to find out from Lakeshore. They're the ones that keep better records on garbage in and out than we do. It's a good goal, though. You know what I'm saying? It is all about delivering new habits to people.
All right. Well, listen, Mayor, I don't know if it'll be the Gourmet Fest or Pumpkin Fest or just exactly when, but I'm sure our paths will cross sometime in the next 6 months.
You can't wait to see you again.
All right. Thanks very much for joining us. Good luck with all this. Mayor Charlie Picaro, the mayor of Highwood, Illinois. I'll talk to you soon.
Have a great weekend.
It's 12:51. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, big jobs report came out today. Numbers better than expected. Today's report marks 94 months now for the current economic recovery. That's a long time, almost 8 years, and longer than typical. Mark Hamrick is a senior analyst at Bankrate.com. He joins us from time to time, especially on these jobs report days, and he's back on a phone line now. Mark, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Great to be back with you, Steve.
Okay, so what do you see here? We're expecting, what, 180,000, 190,000 jobs? Got a lot more than that.
Yeah, and that's in the context of 5 million jobs really seeing a change in personnel in any given month. So, you know, we need to keep the volatility in these numbers somewhat in perspective. But now that we've had data for the first 4 months of the year, only one of those months was below 100,000 on the number of jobs added. And that number, the month in March, was actually revised a bit lower as we closed out the first quarter. But April looked pretty solid. The unemployment rate at 4.4%, lowest in a decade, the so-called U6 rate, which some like better to measure unemployment, also captures the underemployed. That's at 8.6%. That's also about the lowest in 10 years. The biggest problem with the report, it involves our wallet. Wages really not very impressive here, and it's hard to really see how we get any immediate improvement there.
Well, what's that about, Greg? Because if the idea is that the jobs keep being created, there must be pressure, right, for people to hire people, some competition. That follows, right, that we're supposed to start getting paid more money. Why aren't we?
Well, and, you know, we've been saying this for the better part of 5 years now. It is a bit of a conundrum, but I think the answer partly lies in what I believe, that perhaps there's more slack in the job market than many people believe. If you look at the summary of projections from members of the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee, the group that raises or doesn't raise interest rates, as the case may be, as in this week's action or lack thereof, they basically believe that unemployment will go no lower than 4%. But we have seen unemployment lower than 4% in our lifetimes, and we know that the labor force participation is at a historically low level, meaning that the number of people working or looking for work is relatively low. That's largely for demographic reasons, a lot of baby boomer retirements, among other reasons.
That's an important point, because a lot of people, when they were arguing against policies or for policies, they say, so many people out of the job market. But the fact is, so many of us are getting old and retiring, right? And that's leading to a lot of it.
That's right. And the other part, which is actually very positive, high school students don't work as much as they used to. They're staying in school. OMG! Exclamation point. Same thing for college students. So, that's all fine. But to the broader point, I do think that if the recovery could get a couple of years older, and we hope that it does, which you referenced at the top, I don't think there's any reason we couldn't get below 4%. And if so, maybe the job market gets really tight there. I will say one thing that does stand in the way of that issue, too, though, is where you just can't find good candidates for jobs. That's the so-called skills gap. There's a lot going on there. In construction, for example, it's just a lack of available qualified workers for construction. And so this is something we're watching, too.
All right, so we're about 8 years into this recovery, and I think I read somewhere that the average post-war recovery is 5 years. So
yeah.
Does that mean a recession's around the corner? I mean, or is this a unique time?
Good question. There's a saying that is particularly quoted around the central banking circles that recoveries don't die of old age.
Yeah.
Central banks kill them. And there is some truth to that. But to your question specifically, there's nothing on the horizon that suggests that a recession is imminent. And in fact, quite the contrary, I would say. So there's no reason to believe that we can't get some more time out of this. And, you know, I think if you ask most economists, they would put the chances of a recession in the next 12 to 18 months at about 1 in 4. That's pretty low.
All right. Well, keep that. We'll keep you to your word there, Mark Hamrick from Bankrate.com. Switch hats for me a little bit. I want to say congratulations. You won quite an election earlier this week.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you to say so. I wear so many hats that it helps to explain why my hair is thinning.
Right.
But yes, I'm the new president of the Society of American Business Editors and Writers, which is a nonprofit, and it's a volunteer effort, and very important, you know, because as you know, in your business and the passion that we all share for journalism and media, this is a challenging time for our profession, not only facing the threat from social media and the transition from traditional work to the digital model, but also the physical threat that journalists face all around the world and the hostility, frankly, that comes direct from the administration. We have a lot of work to do.
Well, Mark Hamrick, you're the guy to do it. I appreciate you joining us. I look forward to the next time.
Thank you so much, Steve. Have a great weekend.